We're after the Bracha of Olam HaTinim, which is known as the Bracha Saminim. And I think even though we didn't spend too much time in it, I basically said everything I have to say in it. So.
Could you remind me who wrote it? Because it's
Shmuel HaKotan.
Shmuel HaKotan. Shmuel HaKotan. Especially was of a quiet nature, right?
Rav Kook and others pointed out that he was chosen because he says in Turkey of it, Mefor Eliyiv Chal Tismach. So they assumed that he would write it L'Shem Shemayim. There's certainly more to be said about it, but as of now, I did not get a chance to review the other ideas that are relevant to it. Okay. I think we did mention that, just if not, to repeat again now, that this bracha, in the opinion of Gordon, Luther of Gordon, Rav Gordon is the author of two Perushim in the Siddur, collected here in the Siddur, Eish HaTfilos. Not get a chance to look up biographical information on him. Rav Aryeh Leib Gordon, lived in Yerushalayim. So he wrote two commentaries, one called the Iyun Tfilah and one called the Tikkun Tfilah. Tikkun Tfilah is more concerned with comparing different texts to the Tfilah, Ashkenaz, Sfar, and others. The Iyun Tfilah is a running commentary, but he has a very fascinating introduction to the entire Shemoneh Esrei, which we'll be quoting Be'ez Hashem more extensively today and also in subsequent weeks, where he analyzes the development of the Shemoneh Esrei. As we get from the pre-days of the Anshei Knesset Gedola to the brachas that were established by the Anshei Knesset Gedola and then re-established later, as the Gemara Megillah indicates, under the auspices of Rav Gamliel. So he points out, I'm not sure if we stress this, that the bracha of Olam HaShinim, apparently, they had a tradition that this was a bracha that they had the right to add in, whenever necessary. And there might have been previous periods, I don't think he really elaborates on those, but the implication he gives is that this was a 19th bracha that when there were periods, when there were enormous, especially from within, antagonists toward Judaism, so they would establish this bracha, and when they didn't need it, they would take it away. And he has a deal, although it's not a very powerful one. Maybe it's based on other sources, but the language of the Gemara Megillah that speaks about the Birchas Aminim is Mi Yodei Alasakein is Birchas Aminim. So he derives from that not Mi Yodei Alasakein, a bracha dealing with Minim, but as if, you know, that Birchas Aminim, you know, the one that we shelled for a while. Who could create an appropriate nusach for what we're dealing with? Now, interestingly, the Gemara seems to indicate, and that's the very same Gemara. This might be Gemara elsewhere. Just one second.
Kind of warriors of the word tikkun for that question.
Right. Well, yeah. The sakin could be new, but he's deriving mi yodei l'sakin birchas aminim. He understands that to mean who knows how to establish this bracha that we have this tradition from the days of Anshei Knesset Gedola that we have a right to institute when we need it, and now we need it because now is the period, even though it's a question exactly who this Rav Gamliel was, but he tries to develop historically whether it was immediately before the destruction or afterward. But either way, there were many splinter groups at this point, and there was a need to institute this bracha. So, one second. That's why he has this whole discussion. Either way, both are true, but he has a discussion whether they were it was instituted primarily against the early Christians, which many of the commentaries suggested. What he calls them Aritzei HaGalili, the ones who honored and respected the Galilean. That's a way he refers to the Yeshu and Otsri Osaish. But he suggested first the other groups, the Essenes and the various splinter groups, that people of the mountain, the people of light and darkness, that they have a... Those are the people who wrote most of the scrolls that they found in the Qumran caves. People broke away from the standard, what has come down to us in the history books as Rabbinic Judaism, but which we identify as Torah Judaism. In any case, he also proceeds to quote the fact that the Gemara finds all sorts of remuzim as to the number 18. This number 18, well, what is it patterned after? So, we might have spoken about this in other occasions also. So some say it's patterned after the 18 mentionings of Hashem's name in Tfilas Chana. Some say it's patterned after the 18 mentionings of Hashem's name in Mizmor David, when we take back the Sefer Torah, Havel Hashem Bnei Elim. And I think we mentioned before, the first three are directly parallel to the first three brachos, the Elim, the mighty ones, the first three Avos, Havel Hashem Kod V'Oz, the Oz, the first of Gvura, and then Kvod Shemo, where we glorify Hashem's name, and Ata Kadosh, Imcha Kadosh. So then the Gemara says, and what happens when you insert a 19th brachos and everything is askew? So you ruin the whole imagery here. So the Gemara says that they found a remez for the 19th bracha, and then they proceed to go through all of the allusions that refer to number 18. There's also an allusion to a 19th. How so? Just to give a sampling. So, for example, in Mizmor David, it says 18 mentionings of Hashem's main name, so to speak, Havai Yukevavke, but it says once Kael. Interesting, Kael oftentimes is. Elim refers to mighty. So here we're asking Hashem to destroy the Rishoyim. So we're asking him to powerfully destroy the Rishoyim. But it's a remez to the 19th bracha. And the Gemara also says that there are 18 mentionings of Hashem's name in the first two parshas of Kriya Shema. So the remez for the 19th bracha is, I think, Echad. That Hashem is one. And there's also an allusion to this idea, because after the destruction of the Rishoyim, so all recognize Hashem is one. Then the Gemara says that the 18 brachas are parallel to the human spine, the 18 vertebrae of the spine. I think I might have mentioned this before. There was a Torah Mata article put out by the Stern College. I think it's called Hateva, something like that. So they had a whole drush on this. I don't know what the need for the whole drush was. Because in science, they count vertebrae from the end of the skull. But I thought it was clear that Chazal are not going that route. They count the vertebrae from the spine, meaning from the beginning of the shoulders down. So if you're going to go all the way up to the skull, there are going to be more than 18 vertebrae. But that's not what Chazal are counting. They're counting from the main ones that support the body, not the neck. So they're 18. So that's what they finally arrived at in that article. I make fun of the article. It was very, very well written, but I just thought the whole Havmina was not correct. Anyway, the 19th bone, some most assume, is what we refer to as the coccyx, the tailbone, which Rabbi Kaplan identifies with the luz bone. The luz bone is supposed to be the bone that is supposed to not rot in the ground, and is supposed to be the bone that the Tchias Mason begins from. So that was the 19th. There's a remez in the 18th of vertebrae themselves, the 19th, because there's a doesn't quite support the rest of the body, but it's still there. So Chazal were very sensitive to the number 18, and they had to find some remez for the 19th in order to somehow, it sounds like, allow this kind of bracha. That analysis might indicate, I don't think Rav Gordon says this part, but that also the idea that even within those various remezim, there was a hint to the fact that there is permission granted to give the 19th, but that 19th is an appendage. In other words, it's not the Havaya name, it's Kael, it's not the regular name of Hashem, it's Echad, it's not the vertebrae, it's the tailbone. No, when you need it, you put it in. When you don't, take it away.
Shrinking two other brachas together to one?
That's an interesting point, which I was going to discuss now, but I think we'll wait till we get to the next two-way and three-way. Binyan Yerushalayim and Tzemach David. Today was an interesting discussion, the Baal Yerushalmi, that it sounds like the Yerushalmi didn't go the route of the Bavli. They assumed, let's preserve the 18 and shrink, as you just said, two brachas to one. And we'll see later exactly how that was done.
Is there any halamina in any of the Mechabri and Tfilin, a portion of Tfilin that B'vos Mashiach, we don't need to save Elam?
Yeah, so Rav Schwab suggests such an approach.
Really?
It might be alluded to, not explicitly, by the same taken Tfilin, that this was a bracha that you have when you needed it. And the implication is that when the Rishon ready to will take it away. Rosh Schwab said, we mentioned last week, that there's a remez to the Shemon Esrei also in the first 18-19 parakim of Shemon Esrei, where Mizmor Chaf, Mizmor Yutes ends Yila Ratzon and Refi, which is the way we end the Shemon Esrei, and Mizmor Chaf is Yanach Hashem Yom Sora, that Hashem should answer your tefillah. So for us, it's 19 brachas. And there's an interesting tradition, the Gemara records in the first parak of brachas, that there was a split of I think the first parak of Tillim into two. Rashi points it out. So Rosh Schwab says that they split it when they made Lamoshinim. And we look forward to the day that we'll reunify those Prokhim and Tehillim and we'll eliminate Lamoshinim, then it'll be 18. So he does have that idea. Why not?
It's
a lot of carbonates, right. So that's an interesting idea. That touches upon a general topic of being parallel to carbonates does not mean that has its only purpose. If you look in the sources, what it sounds like is the Rambam holds that Tefillah is min haTorah. So Tefillah was freestyle without a set text, still at times at Anshei Knesset Gedolah. And the Anshei Knesset Gedolah formalized the text having nothing to do with carbonos. It had to do with the ability of people to daven. So if you go that route, then the parallel to carbonos would mean that its time order was arranged in terms of carbonos. In the lack of a carbonos era, it also serves to substitute some of those ideas that are inherent within carbonos, but it stands on its own too. So it's really not going to eliminate when the Beis Hamikdash comes.
Rabbi points out that Nusach changed from
Yeah. From the Beis Hamikdash era to later, right? As does this Tikkun Tefillah. There's a lot on that, which most of that comes up later. But the question is a more striking one according to the Ramban, because the Ramban holds that in the Torah there is no mitzvah tefillah, at least on the daily level, only when you have only based Torah. So for the Ramban, it sounds like that they instituted the Shemona Esrei. He doesn't spell all this out, but it sounds like they instituted the Shemona Esrei looking ahead to the era in which Karbanos would no longer exist. Because even though they founded it during the period of Beis Hamikdash, but the main Midrashim that speak about the fact that they knew already this one wasn't going to last. So there's a lot to talk about in terms of that. But the impression you get is there would be no need to repeal that takana. Right. In other words, because Tefillah certainly existed in the period of the second Beis Hamikdash also. The Anshei Knesset Gedolah, the one who founded it. According to the Ramban, they established a daily mitzvah daven. And they did it when there was a Beis Hamikdash. So unless you're going to insist, the only reason they did it was foreseeing the fact that the Beis Hamikdash should be destroyed, so then you could say such an approach that maybe they'll eliminate that the current times of the Beis Hamikdash. But
even
not necessarily say that. Yeah, the Nusach, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what the Tikkun Tefillah already points out, with some echoes in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't really discuss too much, but that the Nusach definitely will change. We're not going to say Hoshev Vesavoda, we're going to say Kabel Vesavoda. I'd like to discuss that more when we get to those brachas. I don't see any indication that the tefillah will be abolished. A friend of mine pointed out that maybe one of the motivations in Anshei Knesset Gedolah in founding tefillah was the fact that karbanos were a disaster. Meaning what? As the Nevi'im point out, they were not fulfilling their stated mission of being makarev klal Yisrael tavim shel shemayim in a form of avoda, but they were serving as a form of quote-unquote divine bribery, meaning that feed the gods, and the Nevi'im, and to keep decrying that in the period of the first Beis Hamikdash. What are you bringing all these kabbarans for? So the Rambam has his famous shot on that in the Moreh Nevuchim, but the standard shot on that is that you're not bringing it properly. So what, you're just giving me a barbecue? I don't need barbecues. So he suggested that the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, when they were grappling with it, eliminating the drive of Avodah Zarah, and they basically did, they kept the drive of atheism alive, of Bechira, but they eliminated Avodah Zarah, so they don't have it anymore. But they created a structure that would not be subject to that kind of abuse. So that's an interesting suggestion. One could say maybe you wouldn't need that anymore in the times of the Third Beis Hamikdash when people will be more directed. But either way, tefillah certainly has a function beyond karbanos, and even according to Ramban, there's a mitzvah to daven be'esara. It doesn't seem there would be any great need to eliminate that takana. Certainly it provides a forum for Klal Yisrael to be able to spill their hearts out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through words in an organized, structured way, in addition to deed, which is karbanos.
Especially, not everyone will bring a korban every single day.
That's also true. Right.
Have a medium.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Many positives, though. But not everyone actually brought it. So just, think. They bring the Talmud now. So it's not as personal. It's a very good hara. But I would imagine that according to all she told, that it would not be repealed. Okay. Now, so what I somewhat of a tangent, but my own tangent, that whole digression with all the numbers, etc., and the various changes that were made. But he notes, this Rav Gordon, that the theme of Olam HaShinim was already included, at least in a minimum format, in the previous bracha. So the Olam HaShinim was more of an expansion of an inherence, a more latent theme within the bracha of Hashiva Shevetenu Kvareishona. Because as we noted, Hashiva Shevetenu Kvareishona has a dual role. In a more Derech HaDrush way, the establishment of Jewish leadership to bring us back to Torah. But it's clear from the text that we're also referring to Aser Me'yogan Vanocha. What does that mean? So again, the Gra had a pshat, El Derech HaDrush, that it means remove the Shibud Malchios, because he views his bracha as a tshuva bracha. Shiva Shevtenu is like a request for tshuva for quality throw. But on a simple level, Gordon points out that it means that through the establishment of judges, the evildoers who are causing Yogam Vanocha will be eliminated. Presumably referring to evildoers within the Klal. Sanhedrin is not going to have sway over the nations who are attacking Klal Yisrael. That's the realm of a government, an army, etc. Directed by Baruch Hu. So then, reading the bracha that way, we already davened in the previous bracha for the establishment of judges who will in turn bring about justice against the Rishonim. So the theme was already there. But in the days of Rav Gamliel, they felt it's not enough. We have to make it more explicit. We have to identify them by name. Lam Oshinim, the Rishonim, etc., the Minim, so on and so forth. Interestingly, the exact text of the bracha has really been lost to us. The bracha was probably a little more violent and a little more explicit than we come down to us, because the Christians always thought that it was attacking them. Because it was, at least originally. But so that it is a big, widely diverse text. And in the various manuscripts, because it was highly censored. Risha, for example, in earlier versions, used to have Malchus Zodon, the evil kingdom, which maybe was a reference to Rome, and then was translated to the Christian government, etc., even though that wasn't the original intention. But so the bracha underwent a lot of changes. And then there were different thrusts in terms of Rabbanim in our era, like, should we go back to the old? I think the consensus was, how are you going to have a guarantee that you're really going back to the old Nusach? Because even the old Nuschos, there's no... I am the right Nusach, right? We don't have such things. So pretty much we've kept it as it is, and Nusach Ashkenaz says it's traditional text, Nusach Sephardis, even though it's pretty clear that this is not the original text. Certainly Yotze B'dievet, it has this general theme in it. But the original bracha made it much more explicit. It was what they were addressing. That's why Bapastas had addressed the phrase Minim. Minim meant various groups, various splinter groups. So there was a need, says Rav Gordon, to spell out the latent theme of the bracha of Hashavas HaSanhedrin, Hashiva Shevetenu Kvareishona, which also alluded to the destruction of the Rishonim, to make it into a separate bracha. So now we can understand that it wasn't a brand new idea. We didn't take a brand new idea and stick it in the Shimon Esrei. We just expanded on a previous theme and make it into a bracha by itself.
If you look at the Nusach Rosh Hashanah, it says, "Hein tzadikim yismachu." It's right there. That whole theme is right there.
Right. The theme of destruction of Yisrael is very much elaborated upon in Rosh Hashanah, as well as Lahavdu, of course.
The theme was known for Tzadon was well known for Tzadon. It's obviously well known for Tzadon. That's the old Nusach.
Michel Azadon, right. Savir Michel Azad Menorah.
Yeah.
Right. Lahavdu, that was Bush's drasha post 9/11, which was right around.
Yeah.
A little bit after. Our mission is clear: to eradicate all evil from the face of the earth. Taken straight out of the sitter. Okay. Ad Kan, in terms of our analysis of Lam HaShinim, just one other ha'ara, I think Oshwab has this, so that explains the Vav. There are few instances of a Vav in the Shimon Esrei. Again, this itself is subject to Nuschos, so this is the kind of art. If it's there, you could say it, but you can't necessarily put an absolute seal on it, because it's not the only text that we have, but our version has evolved. So Rav Schwab says, right, because the Shiva of Olam HaShinim is basically one bracha. Well, Mashiach is expanding on the theme of Shir Shiftein. I think it's Rosh Chodesh. If not, it's one or the other, unfortunately. Okay. The other bracha that has a vav is Veli Rishalayim, which we'll try to discuss a little when we get there. Again, I think Nusach Sfarad doesn't have a vav, so, okay. I think it begins Tishkon Vesoch Rishalayim. Let's discuss a little bit the bracha of Al Tzadikim. For some reason or another, I always had a problem. I know it's talking about Tzadikim. But I always had a problem putting my finger on it. Exactly what is the thrust of this bracha other than a tefillah for tzaddikim? That I understand. How does it fit in? So the earliest source that we have about in terms of its general structure and is the Gemara Megillah, the Yitzayin, which we keep going back to, that speaks about the fact that after the Rishayim are destroyed, Mishra Memes, Karen Tzaddikim, in the order of the process of Geula, which the Gemara has from the bracha of Berech Aleinu all the way to the end of Shemoneh Esrei. After the downfall of the Rishayim, so the Tzaddikim are able to have more sway. But as we noted, that order that the Gemara Megillah points out is not the only theme within the brachos. That Gemara is pointing out a more Gula-oriented messianic theme in the Shemoneh Esrei, but presumably there's a more pre-Gula theme as well. To this bracha. So, in a word, it seems this bracha is asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to include us within the super righteous who are zoche to extra divine providence, because that's what the Mishana point out based on Psukim, Ragle Chasid of Yishmor, that the more righteous one is, the more divinely protected you are. So he asks Hashem to continue the protection of the tzaddikim. And even for those who are not as roy, that simchal kenu imoyim. So we should kind of coattail on their protection. Many of the commentaries try to subdivide between the various groups of people that are spoken about in this bracha: tzaddikim, chasidim, ziknei amcha beis Yisrael, pleita sofreim, geri tzedek, and aleinu. So aleinu is simple. That's all. As Rav Schwab puts it, that's the common Jew. Whatever. Anyone who's davening, Zaleinu. Presumably you could have a tzaddik who's saying this bracha and probably thinks that he's also included in Aleinu. That's what my son told me a story from his Rebbe, that the Baal Shem Tov heard that they were a humble priest. So he couldn't believe it. How could it be a truly humble priest? Only by the Jews could you have truly humble people. I don't know if Mice is true or not, whatever. So he went to the town of the priest. And he saw Taka, the priest, is very, very humble. So it's very unassuming, etc. Trying to oisik petoch yitzibur. So he's very upset. How could it be? So as he was about to leave, he introduced himself to the priest. This is when he first came along. And I'm here to observe you, your righteous deeds and humility, your world-renowned humility. So as he's about to leave, so the priest comes to him and says, "New rabbi, I was humble, right?" Thank you very much. Now I figured out why I came. I'll go back home. He's only one of tzaddikim are davening feel they have in mind aleinu, right? They don't think themselves tzaddikim. But what are these individuals? So here again, there are very diverse opinions as to how to label each one, and also in terms of who's higher than the other. We're just going to give a cross section. Rav Schwab assumes, as does the Eitz Yosef. In his that's Rav Zundel, another one of the commentaries in the Otzer Tzios, that tzaddikim is the highest level. It means someone who's totally righteous. Doesn't mean he never sins, but it means he always corrects his errors immediately. So that's a tzaddik. A chassid. So Rav Schwab says a chassid is someone who goes beyond the letter of the law. To be mischaseid and kono, meaning you go beyond lefnim yishur hadin. It doesn't mean necessarily in all other areas you're perfect, but that in general you go beyond. Because of that, there are others who flip it and say tzaddikim means a basic tzaddik, and a chassid is higher than a tzaddik, right? And someone who is perfect, but is more than perfect, meaning goes beyond what is required. Zikni amcha beis Yisrael refers to zakenim. So as the Gemara and Kiddushin points out, and the Pasuk in Parashat Kedoshim, which we read last week, that it says vadarta mipnei seva tokum vadarta pnei zakein, that you have to stand up for older individuals and also in front of zakenim. So the Gemara says that a zakein doesn't refer necessarily to an older person; it refers to someone who is a Torah scholar. Zeh shekana chokhma. And since it's so this could mean, this could refer theoretically to all Torah scholars, we'll see in a moment, presumably not, because something has to be included in Sofrim. So here, the Zakenim, in addition to meaning a Torah scholar, it also sometimes refers to, like, quote-unquote, the elders, meaning the rabbinic leaders. So you have the individual tzaddikim, not all of whom necessarily are the leaders. Then you have chassidim, and then you have Zikne Alfei Yisrael, the leaders of Klal Yisrael, the spiritual leaders.
Well, not necessarily tzaddikim.
Okay, you can say that seriously, say as a joke.
By mentioning the
question. Right, I understand. Right. So the reality is that some say it means the lay leaders. But I'm hesitant to say that because usually, certainly in the language of the Chachamim, which certainly colors the Shemona Esrei, based on that pasuk, Zeshekana Chachma, Zekanim, as opposed to Rosh Ha'am, etc., will oftentimes refer to people who are Torah scholars, and as Rabbi Shecht always quotes from his Rebbe, Rabbi Gerelich, that we have no barometer for Yerushimayim. So we assume that the more Torah you know, that generally speaking, that's going to determine to a large extent the degree of Yerushimayim. Well, not necessarily. Theoretically, if we knew it as a righteous individual who's not a Torah scholar, so he would have just as much rights to, let's say, kavod of the tzibur as the Torah scholar. But there are those who go that route, but I'm hesitant to say that. I would rather say this refers to spiritual leaders, who I assume are also, at least, hopefully, tzaddikim. Okay.
We cannot say that the very fact that there are two different expressions says that they are not over. They are overlapping each other, but they are not the same.
Right. They can't be the same. Right.
So but there has to be Hasidim that they are not leaders, and has to be, or not Zikne Israel, and has
right.
to be at least one Zakein Israel,
right.
is not Hasid or a Tzaddik.
That's not true. No, you could say they're all.
Otherwise, it's
Tzaddik Hasid plus.
No, right, but yeah, but no, that you said.
It cannot mean the same.
But there could be an overlap.
Plus, it's more.
Right, Zikne Amcha could mean those are also Tzaddikim, but
right.
Allah Tzaddikim is referring to the regular Tzaddikim, and then we single out for special mention
higher levels.
The Zikne Amcha. I would suggest. Okay. You could debate this. Now we have Pleitas Sofreim. So here it's interesting to actually took yourselves. One is Pleitas Sofreim and one is Pleitas Beis Sofreim. So I thought that the simple shot was Pleita, right, of course, means being saved from something. Like we say in the Davening in Karbonos, Rone Fale to Sovaveni Fela. That's what, okay, let's leave that tangent. Rone Fale is difficult to translate. It means songs of salvation. Rina. Falet means to, like a palit, goes to Avram Avinu, means a refugee, someone who was saved. But here also, pleita sofreim means the people who were saved. Yaakovina says, v'hoya she'eris ha'machan ha'nishar l'pleita. We speak about she'eris ha'pleita. So, this is a bracha that was said during the period of the Beis HaMikdash also, but maybe was even touched up, which we'll get to in a moment. Especially in the period of Golus. So there was a lot of persecution, especially there was persecution against the Torah scholars. And even from within, the Maccabim, Yanai, he wiped out all the Chachamim. So there was terrible persecution against both from within and from without against Torah scholars. So we speak about Pleita Sofreim, the ones who survived, literally. Who are the Sofrim? See, here again, there are different nuances, but basically it means average Torah scholars. There's one idea that the Ian Tfila has, which I would suggest just based on the order, is not correct. But he says it refers to the Tanoim and the Amoraim, because in the language of the Gemara, they refer to as Sofrim. Mipnei ma'nikru chachamim Sofrim. But I thought in context, I would tend to agree more with Rav Schwab's idea that Sofrim is a way of saying melamdim, people who teach, derived from the word sefer, people who primarily teach Chumash, but by extension meaning all Torah teachers. Chumash, Mikra, Mishnah. So we have a bracha for the tzaddikim and the chassidim, we have a bracha for the zakenim, the elders, and we have a bracha for Torah scholars who teach. Why are they called pleitas? Again, interestingly, according to my theory, I don't know if it's a theory, but why do we say pleitas on the sofrim and not on all the others? Why not pleitas tzaddikim? But still, I don't know the answer to that. I would suggest it means that those who are physically saved from persecution. Rav Schwab is an interesting pshat. I don't know if he really meant this as the correct pshat. I don't know if it's tongue-in-cheek. It's hard to get the inflections. You know, Mr. Lorch told me he has the tapes.
They're coming online.
From Rav Schwab, yeah?
Yeah.
So yeah, after how he said this, but he says it means because who wants to be a Torah teacher? Right? That's the old joke, at least in Rebbe school they teach you, that all the professional Balbatim, they want their kids to be doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs. Because a Rebbe doesn't really pay. You're going to be a Rebbe, what are you going to make? You can't make a living that way. Mm. So they all want the most excellent teachers for their students. But they don't want their for their children, but they don't want their children to be teachers.
Right.
Okay. I don't think that applies to this crowd, but the bottom line is, Pleita Sefraim, there are very few who wants to be a Torah teacher. Again, if that's what the Ashkenazi school had in mind, it could be. I thought again, it could be with halachic humor, but siddur humor. I don't know, but there was no, you know, laugh in parentheses. So I assume he meant it seriously. So maybe he didn't mean it seriously. I just Rav Schwab is Schwab. I'm a little nothing compared to him.
Well, look at Shimon and Levi, who were the Torah teachers, when it described it, it's not like, you know, these are the roles, you know, because
right.
You have to misakin your midos, you're going to be the Torah teacher. You don't get any land. You know,
yeah, but there were other teachers.
I know, but the paradigm, though, of it, it's not, I mean, you know, you could learn it. It's not looked upon as an honor in the Torah, I don't think.
I have to debate that.
You don't think
for personal reasons, too, I have to debate that.
Okay, so.
I'm trying to relate it to, you know, this.
Oh, one second. Here I am looking at this clock, and it stopped. And we're going over. Okay, so one final word. Sorry. One final word. We'll hopefully pick up this bracha next week. Geri HaTzedek. Elena, we already discussed this, everyone. Geri HaTzedek. So here's a very fascinating comment, again from Rav Gordon. And he notes, I think we spoke about this before, we're going to see more and more about this, that Shemona Esrei was updated. He learns that the Gemara Megillah that has Rabbi Gamliel getting a hold of Shimon HaPikuli to reorder the Shimon Esrei, which the simple reading is because they forgot the order. They were saying it Baal Peh, didn't have a sitter. And the order somehow got garbled. So he asked him to reorder it, which he did. This is the way Rashi and most Rishonim understand. Based on a different gears in the Gemara, Rav Gordon understands that Rabbi Gamliel authorized Shimon HaPikuli to update the Shimon Esrei. And that was the point that Mr. Schlanger just made before, because in the period of the Beis HaMikdash, they davened for the acceptance of the Karbanos. Presumably, they didn't have to daven for Hashiva Shiftenu Kavar Shemona, because they had a Sanhedrin. As a matter of fact, when they first found the Shemona Esrei, they had the Ansikas HaGadola as the Sanhedrin. So that's pretty solid. So they had to make changes to the Shemona Esrei. So he writes that since the Gemara Megillah writes on this Bracha Val Tzadikim, the Kolel Geirei Tzedek Imohim, that included in the Bracha of Tzedekim, we should include Geirim. Much as the Gemara comments on the previous Bracha about the destruction of the Rishayim, the Kolel Zedim, or the Kolel Minim Imohim. So, why did I have to make such a big deal about that, the Kolel Geirei Tzedek? Why didn't it say the Kolel Chasidim Imohim? So he suggests that this was a later addition. Why? Because there were always Geirim. But almost paradoxically, there was an enormous influx of Geirim in the period Dafka of the close to the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Real Geirim. Not for marriage. Not for basketball. Because you have to be Jewish to play in the Israeli basketball teams, and there were certain pressures to the Geirim that route. But Dafka, when Klal Yisrael was on a downswing, so there were many non-Jews, and I'm not a historian, but he's reading all over the place, Rav Gordon. He knows Josephus by heart, and he knows he's quoting Cassius, and they wrote about this upswing of Geirim in the time of the destruction, or toward the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, and everyone's wondering about it. What's going on? Dafka and the downfall, people are coming to join them, but that's what happened. So they made a special mention of these righteous individuals who joined Klal Yisrael, in language of Soloveitchik, who not only became part of the Goy of Klal Yisrael, part of the Am, meaning they threw in their lot, for good or for bad. Stories about that in the Holocaust also, right? For the Holocaust, there were people who joined the Jewish people. And in order to join them. So that's what we mentioned specifically, and of course it applies in our era as well, many Geirei Tzedek, that we daven for extra protection that Hashem should bestow.